call the House Special Committee on Fisheries to order on April 14th, 2009 at approximately 9:02 a.m. Present, we have Representative Johnson, Representative Munoz, Representative Book, Vice Chair Keller, and myself, Chair Edgman. As always, we ask those in the audience to turn your cell phones off. Today, we'll be hearing two resolutions, and it's the Chair's intent to have introductory presentations on the bills and then to set them aside for future action at some later date, which likely will be next session or maybe in the interim if that opportunity arises. The first resolution will be House Concurrent Resolution 15, which deals with the Bristol Bay mining study, and we've switched the order because the sponsor, the bill sponsor for House Joint Resolution 32 regarding United Cook Inlet Drift Association's lawsuit and the federal preemption of salmon management. The bill sponsor is in conference committee, and we've recognized that he couldn't be available, so we're going to switch the order and have a House Concurrent Resolution 15 come before the committee first. Testimony today is by invitation only, and we want to cover the resolutions and have some committee discussion. And with that, any comments or questions by committee members before we undertake our two resolutions? If not, let's begin with HCR 15, and the bill sponsor's staff come to the table, please. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Erin Harrington. I'm staff to Representative Alan Osterman from District 36. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm here today to talk to you about House Concurrent Resolution 15. HCR 15 requests that Ledge Council contract with the National Research Council of the National Academy of Sciences for an assessment of the environmental and socioeconomic consequences of large-scale mineral extraction in the Bristol Bay Area watershed. I'll provide you a little bit of background on the National Research Council. You've probably heard of it. You may not be familiar with the details of how it operates. The NRC is part of the National Academy of Sciences. The National Academy of Sciences was created and signed into being by President Lincoln on March 3rd, 1863, and its purpose, as stated in its founding act, is to investigate, examine, experiment, and report upon any subject of science or art, that's a quote, whenever called upon to do so by any department of government. So that's the first important note about the NRC, is that it's not an organization that provides consulting services to anyone who comes along. It's explicitly intended to provide policy guidance and scientific and technical analysis to governmental decision-making processes. The mission of the NRC is to improve government decision-making and public policy, to increase public education and understanding, and to promote the acquisition and dissemination of knowledge in matters involving science, engineering, technology, and health. They do three general kinds of research. The first type of research they do is regulatory analyses. So this would be an outside third-party objective and distanced review of a regulatory process that may already be in place. The second type of research that they conduct is program reviews. Again, a review of programs that would be in place within government, trying to provide an outside objective opinion to support decision-making by public policymakers and governmental administrations. And then the third type of assistance that they provide is general assistance, which we can assume to be everything else that we might need help answering questions on. Some of the things that they do, they draw conclusions from existing research to support decision making. They also, importantly, can identify research that may be needed to support decision making that may not exist already, but that would be of value scientifically, technically, or otherwise. They are a nonprofit organization, and they are a non-governmental organization, but importantly, they don't provide services to for-profit entities. Again, they are a resource for government, for decision makers. And the people who serve on their consensus committees are not paid. They're scientists who are brought in to because of their expertise on the issue that they're addressing. They bring, I believe when I was looking at some of their statistics, about 6,000 people to work on various issues over the years. Over the course of a typical year, they produce 250 consensus studies over the course of a typical year. So that's a little bit about the NRC. So the purpose of the resolution that you have before you today, it requests that Legislative Council contracts with National Academy of Sciences for an independent assessment of known and probable cumulative environmental and socioeconomic consequences of large-scale mineral extraction in the Bristol Bay watershed. The second purpose is to assess perhaps critical gaps in existing knowledge that might be necessary to adequately understand, predict, or manage some of the environmental and socioeconomic impacts that could be expected or anticipated from a development in this region, and to bring some additional information to a decision-making process of significant weight that your body and then the administration's various departments will be called upon to participate in coming years. A couple of thoughts on that. As you all know, and as I'm sure the chairman knows and has spoken to you all about, it is a decision that has significant policy weight as well as potential environmental and socioeconomic impacts. And the resolution acknowledges and calls for participation and potential value from nonpartisan, non-advocacy organization. And as it stands right now in the conversation that has been ongoing about the Pebble development, there are lots of people who have invested significant amount of time in trying to understand it. But it may be challenging for policymakers and also for members of the public to tease out the information and understand it in a way that they feel comfortable with. And the resolution speaks to that and is looking to identify a tool to bring to bear on the issue that can help us get some good non-advocacy viewpoints on the issue. It's also, I think, worth noting that NRC is the preeminent body for conducting objective research and for doing it in a way that insulates the people who are engaged in the research from the kinds of influences that can otherwise draw research into question. And I just sort of point that out. And we actually, Mr. Chairman, will have someone available to testify to the committee who's been involved in NRC research in Alaska before and who can talk a little bit about the way that the involvement of the NRC helped to diffuse some tensions around the issue that they were involved in. Just want to provide you a little bit of background. This is not the first time that Alaska has invited the NRC to do work in the state. There are 16 studies that were conducted between 1990 and 2009. They ranged on issues from significant resource extraction and outer continental shelf planning to local challenges. We had Bering Sea ecosystem research that was done here in Alaska. The NRC was brought in when we had stellar sea lion declines in the Gulf of Alaska fisheries and wanted to understand how to approach those and understand some of the science behind some of what was going on in the Gulf and what was impacting fisheries and communities. NRC was engaged in developing the research and restoration plan for the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim salmon, and the individual, Dr. Joseph Spader, who's available to testify, that's the project that he was involved in. On a local level, they helped Fairbanks with some of their particulate issues that they have up there, which you all were addressing again this year in legislation. They were involved in the design of a comprehensive risk assessment after the grounding of the Selandang IU and the Aleutians a couple of years ago, trying to understand how to avoid those kinds of things in the future. And currently, just in 2009, the state has again contracted with them for a risk assessment peer review related to our oil and gas pipeline infrastructure in the state. So this is an entity that's been engaged in supporting the administration and local government and the legislature in sort of wrestling with weighty issues in the past. I think with that, hopefully you've all had a chance to read the resolution. I think that you'll agree that it recognizes that we have important industries here in the state that have viewpoints on what's going to happen on Pebble and have have investment and that we would really like to have someone weigh in and give us some guidance in an objective manner.
Thank you, Ms. Harrington. Questions from committee members, for the bill sponsors, staff? Representative Book?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Aaron, good morning. I had the pleasure of going out to the Pebble Mine and talking to many of the people out there that were at work out there, including the very qualified hydrologists that are doing some current studies. And my concern was that they are doing a very empirical analysis. I believe that they're, when I asked them about the protocol that they were using, it seemed to be that they were using the standards that were set up through the kinds of training and discipline that you know, anybody would require at the top level. My hope would be that those and that information and that data that's being gathered now in a very scientific manner, it is being produced and shipped down to the lower 48 to separate labs for second and third party verification down there, and that in the aquifer studies in particular, we're getting probably the best baseline study the state's ever had. So that information, I would hope, would become public whether or not this mine is produced and developed or not. And it would be a terrible loss to the state of Alaska if all of that information and that all of that careful process was lost, because I think it is the first time in the history of the state that we have done such a comprehensive study, and that I think that it's very important that that baseline information be made public eventually.
So. Thank you, Representative Book. Before we go to Ms. Harrington, I'd like the record to reflect that Representative Kawasaki joined us some time ago, and that we also have Ed Fogles from DNR online for questions, and we have one more individual to testify on this bill. As we mentioned at the outset, the testimony on the both of the resolutions are invitation only, and we do have the bill sponsor for the other resolution somewhere here in the mix as well. But Ms. Harrington, do you want to respond to Representative Book?
Representative Book, through the chair, I'm not aware of the details of how the information that's being developed through Northern Dynasties Research is being shared with the public at this time.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned how many other studies have been done in the state? Nine, did I hear? Or since 1990, they've done nine?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I have a list of 16 studies 16. That have been done from 1990 through 2009.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my question is, who paid for those?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I do not have a list of who paid for the individual studies, but NRC provides consulting work to review work to governmental agencies. And so when I look down the list, I would see many studies here that would appear to have been paid for by the state of Alaska. I see at least one that looks like it would have been paid for by the municipality of Fairbanks.
Representative Johnson, additional questions?
Nope.
Okay. Representative Keller?
Yeah, hi, Eric. I was wondering if you would spend a little more time talking about what the product is we're asking for here. You call it an assessment. Is this, what do you envision? I mean, I think you also called it a tool and a non-advocacy viewpoint. Are you envisioning, you're not asking them for conclusions, you're just saying give us information? I mean, it seems really, really broad, your inclusion of the comment of learning about what we don't know. You know, and I was just wondering, what is your idea that we would get volumes of data that would be given back to the legislature for this expenditure, and then we would analyze it with whatever else is out there, or what?
Representative Keller, through the chair, I apologize, because I actually have sitting on my desk upstairs the result from research that was done related to North Slope gas development, and it's a volume that I would be happy to show you of about 200 pages. It's a book and it is the results, the study results. And so NRC produces study reports, and those reports are meant to be useful and usable by decision makers. To answer your question about some of the types of information that might be in there, it would certainly be a review of existing scientific and technical information related to mine developments specific to the region, but also general information that could be drawn from other types of mine developments in other regions, informative information. Another point of value that the NRC process, research process, can bring to this kind of issue is to identify perhaps questions that that can be asked in early stages and as development and permitting goes along, to make sure that that information that's going to be useful early in the process, questions that we might want to ask early in the process, that we have the opportunity to ask those and to frame the research that goes into a long-term permitting process appropriately, so that we don't get partway into it and then realize that we wish that we had asked a certain set of questions earlier, but we didn't perhaps know to ask them.
Before we go to Representative Johnson, let me just offer this commentary. My name is on the bill because I support the whole effort to have the National Academy of Sciences come in and study the project. As one of the whereases on page 2 alludes, line 21, whereas the National Academy of Sciences is a premier source of objective review of complex scientific questions. And this whole issue about the Pebble Mine abutting the last great salmon fisher on planet Earth is about water. And it's about the interaction of surface water, and it's interaction about subsurface water, and the science of knowing how all the water bodies out there interrelate. It's one of the more prolific, one of the more sensitive, more dynamic watersheds, not just in Alaska, but in the world as well. And why not have this extra step of having the National Academy of Sciences come in and provide, the analysis that the leading scientists from around the country who've looked at similar situations around the world, certainly in the continental United States, come in and be able to analyze the project in an extent that, granted that we haven't done with any other existing mining project, but let's face it, we don't have another mining project in Alaska. The Kensington or the Pogo or Rock Creek or Nixon Fork, or you just go down the list of all the major projects in Alaska that line up right next to the biggest salmon fishery, you know, left on planet Earth. So this is, to the people out there, a real critical issue. And certainly you could also argue that that the study, if conducted, and, the conclusions, offered may actually help the development of the mine as well, too. So you can look at it from both viewpoints as well. So Vice Chair Keller, that's my comments and follow-up.
Thank you. The reason for my question is, it's we're purchasing something. I want to know what we're purchasing, and purchasing an assessment, that's very, very general, very, very broad, and it would have to be developed a whole lot. Of course, I'm all for as many studies as we can get. As I understood it, I heard somebody, I'm trying to remember where I read this, but there's $90 million that has been spent by the Pebbles partnership on 13 or 14 different economic studies, So I mean, great, bring it on. But the question I have is what the legislature here is proposing to purchase another study, and if we just call it an assessment, I want to know what it is, because if we're just buying data that's already there, I mean, it just didn't seem right. So anyway, that was the intent of my question.
Ms. Harrington.
Representative Keller, through the chair, I think that that's a very valid question, and I think that that's one that in part would be addressed through the contracting process with NRC to outline what the scope of the work is and what the legislature desires and requests as an outcome from that to support your decision-making process.
Follow-up.
One last follow-up. The gas pipeline work that they're doing, that's a permitted project. And so it just seems like this is really early in the process, to be looking for a study until we can refine what we're asking for a little bit.
Well, that's a perfect opportunity, and I know Representative Johnson's had his hand up, but I'm going to interject a point here as well, that, you know, I went to the Pebble Partnership website last night, and, you know, how early in the project should you be doing this type of analysis, I think is a very germane question, but, you know, if you look at the work that the Natural Academy has done, review of the Prince William Sound Risk Assessment Study. The study team developed a number of models to look at their level of risk and evaluate proposed risk mitigation measures and you know, probabilistic risk assessment models and so forth. They did it after the fact. We don't want to do it after the fact with the salmon resources out there in the watershed. And I think for those of us around the table who may have differing views on that, maybe that's one thing that we can all agree on. The other comment, again, before we go to Representative Johnson, is that the Pebble Partnership has spent $132 million on environmental socioeconomic studies to their credit, 50 consulting firms, 500 environmental studies hired by the company who wants to develop the project. So here's an opportunity to do a third-party assessment, in my view, that is necessary. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to go back to your comments about line 21 and 22 of the resolution. I, too, want to do everything that we can possibly do to protect the valuable resource of Bristol Bay, but I kind of echo, I'm wondering where they're going to get the information to evaluate. We just heard that the Pebble Partnership has spent $132 million. Much of that's proprietary and will not be released until there's actually an EIS done, a proposal made for the project, which I hear may be a year to 2 years away from now. So why are we spending $1 million now? Are we expecting this company to go out and duplicate the $132 million? I mean, where's the data that they're going to put in the mill and grist to come out with the project? Where are they going to get this data? Are we expecting them to go out and do this for $1 million when Pebble spent $132 million, and why now? I guess, I mean, I understand early. I do want to do it early. But I don't see where they're going to get the data. I mean, this is still proprietary until such time as it has been, until there's been a filing. And that could be, so why are we spending $1 million in 10 that may not even be able to be used until 12, 13, who knows? And maybe never. They may not even file.
Ms. Harrington.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I think those are excellent questions, and I think they will sort of highlight some of the differences between the process that NRC would be undertaking and the process that the Pebble Partnership is undertaking. The NRC would not be attempting to duplicate the $135 million process that Pebble's been going through. The purpose of this research, among others, and again, this will be subject to the contract that you as the legislature choose to enter into them, but the purpose would be to look at some of the known parameters, of which there are many. I mean, we know that there's would be a mine project. We know that it would be located in a geographic region that's somewhat identified. We know what they would be looking to mine. We know some basic information about what the geology is there. We know they'd have to have roads. We know they'd need to have a port. So there are knowns. And the idea would be to look at some of these things and draw information from other projects and from other experiences that have occurred elsewhere, and to try to scope out questions and issues that will be important for the decision-making process that may not come directly out of the strict permitting process that the Pebble Partnership needs to go through. And I'll say as an aside, I previously worked for one of the companies that has been involved in the Pebble Partnership, and so I am aware of how robust the information is that they're gathering and the great investment that they're making there. But the NRC can help us ask questions that we might not otherwise know to ask. Ask them of the Pebble Partnership. We have this question about how this may impact Alaska. Can you make sure that you include this in your analysis, in your, you know, $160 million that you're spending, so that we have that information? It's a tool for the policy body, which is a little bit different than a tool for the permitting process. And so there's that piece of it. Why now? To answer that question, I would perhaps say that the permitting process is a I don't want to say it's narrow because it's enormous, but it's a legally constrained process. There are certain things that they're going through. And a broader study may invite some additional questions that we might like to have asked as part of that process that may not be on the table presently. And once that process is in place, it's harder to bring some of those questions in if they weren't scoped already. NRC was involved in outer continental shelf research, and I did talk to some folks at the NRC about the kind of value that they brought into that discussion. And they talked about the EIS process and how when you're doing an EIS for a lease sale, you don't necessarily know what the parameters of the project are going to be prior to the lease. You know that after the lease is done and after the company comes forward and says what they're going to do. But you still have to do an EIS beforehand, anticipating what some of the issues are going to be. And we do that, and we feel that we can do that in a reasonable way. The details of it may change as the details of the project evolve, but it isn't unreasonable to go in beforehand and to make some informed guesses and some data-supported analysis about what we can anticipate to see from the project. And I hope that that answers at least two of the three questions that you put to me.
The third? I don't even remember.
The third was, why not, would the legislature be spending money now that then couldn't be used until after the permits were filed and more data became available? And I would say that I do not believe that this process needs all of that specific data. It's a much higher level process, and it will be drawing from other experiences and helping us ask the appropriate questions once that permitting process begins.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that. And it seems to me like we're spending $1 million to get questions when I've got plenty. So if someone would just write me a check, I would be happy to ask the questions.
Would that be Johnson and Johnson?
Johnson and Johnson or someone. No, and that I'm joking, of course. And this is very serious, and I'm not trying to make light of it. I think we're very early in the process, and as you stated, there's no other project like this. There's no other project in the world. So how are we going to ask someone to evaluate this project on the basis of another project? And that's what I've just heard, that they're going to spend all this $1 million to go out and find all these other projects and compare our project to their project when there's no other project like ours. So I think you summed it up just about as accurately as we can, and I happen to think we have some of the best scientists working for us. And if we don't, we can certainly, for $1 million, we can go get a few.
Well, and I
thank you, Mr.
Representative Johnson. Mike,
we're very early in this, I understand.
I appreciate your comments, and my constituents would say, is that good enough? And do we know if it's good enough? And that's why I'm signed on to this bill, and I would appreciate the additional analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would make the same comment I made on the floor the other day, that to some people, enough is never enough. And there is never enough, and there will never be enough on this project. And it's going to be a very tough decision when it actually gets down to that. So, there will never be enough.
With that, we do have one person online, and the individual about to testify, if he still is on the phone, was invited to offer some comments on the overall process involved in the assessment. Representative Johnson,
before we go on with that, and this is procedural, so is it your intention to only take this one testimony and the other people who might be here or online to testify or listening in will not weigh in today?
That is correct. The meeting was noticed as invited testimony only.
Okay. And the only person invited is?
Joe Spader.
Spader? Okay.
Yes. And with that, Joe, are you on?
Clarification, we'll know for people out there who may be waiting in the queue.
Thank you. Joe, are you online?
Yes, I am.
If you would identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please, and offer us at least a few minutes of commentary. We've got another bill that needs to come up, and so if you could offer your testimony, please, and we'll be on our way.
Thank you very much. I'm Dr. Joe Spader, and I serve as the staff research coordinator for the Arctic Yukon-Kuskokwim Sustainable Salmon Initiative. Just like to make a few brief comments about our firsthand experience through the Sustainable Salmon Initiative with the NRC over a two-year period as both the sponsor and recipient of one of their studies. The Sustainable Salmon Initiative focuses on identifying and funding high-priority salmon research in western Alaska, the Norton Sound, Yukon, and Kuskokwim watersheds, to try to understand the some of the causes of the decline of salmon stocks in that area. And it's a collaborative research effort, which includes the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, National Marine Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and three regional rural native organizations and one nonprofit. And as a diverse group with state, federal, rural native
Mr. Speaker,
member organizations.
Can I interject? Is this tied to the National Academy of Sciences?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, it is. And we had a very challenging situation in terms of developing a robust research plan to target funds to address the highest priority research issues. And it was clear that we needed an objective and independent third party to help sort through issues and to get some objectivity and some distance from this. All of the member organizations had strong feelings, and there's a great deal of uncertainty. And so we strongly considered the National Research Council based on the kinds of comments that Aaron made, that is, in terms of some of the work they had done elsewhere, Outer Continental Shelf, cumulative effects of oil and gas activities in the North Slope. And we were also aware that they had helped both the North Pacific Research Board and the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council develop effective and robust plans. And we were in need of that same same kind of objectivity. And so as some of the elements, common elements among organizations looking to the NRC is having issues of significant scale, and they're often contentious issues. They're complex issues that are interdisciplinary, and have technical and scientific issues at their core. And there are also issues about which there is considerable uncertainty, and that they benefit from bringing the best available science, and that they benefit from a fresh look and an independent review that seeks to be impartial. So the Sustainable Salmon Initiative in 2003 contracted with the National Academy of Science, the National Research Council, to bring to help us develop a robust science plan for targeting funds in western Alaska, both in the marine and the freshwater. And over the course of their two-year study, it provided us firsthand experience with their rigorous process and some of the procedures and policies they have in place to ensure that there's an objective, that their study committee proceeds in an objective way. And it begins, there's four brief elements to it. First, the sponsorship, and independence and credibility begins with the sponsorship. As Aaron noted, the NRC is not operate like a consulting firm. Nearly all of their studies are funded by policy bodies, by governmental entities who need the best available science brought to them in an integrated way. And once these entities fund the study, the sponsors do not have control over the nor other interested parties have a control over the outcome of that study. So they have a process for committee selection. The sponsors do not select the committee members, but rather they're chosen on the basis of their knowledge, experience, and they're vetted independently by the National Academy of Science. They seek balance on a committee, and there's a rigorous process for disclosure of conflicts of interest among any of the committee members that are selected. And a normal committee is about 10 to 12 individuals selected from a variety of interdisciplinary and appropriate fields. The committee receives input from a variety of entities, and they have essentially public hearings where members of the public and government agencies and industries can provide information. All information submitted to the National Academy of Science process becomes available to the public. That is, they don't have confidential information that's provided only to them and not made available to policymakers. So they have a strong transparency and public access to information built into their process. And the final phase is their report review and publication. After a study committee develops a report, that report then goes out for yet another round of external peer review to provide yet another layer of independence and objectivity. And the assistance we received, the Sustainable Salmon Initiative received from the National Research Council, helped enormously in terms of cutting through a variety of views of information focused from one agency or from one set of stakeholders. It helped us in a interdisciplinary and focused way sort through a great deal of information about the probable causes of decline of Western Alaska salmon, and helped us to focus on a comprehensive research plan. And so, again, three reasons how this process benefited. First,
Mr.
they
Spader?
Have robust
Mr.
protocols in
Mr.
place
Spader.
To ensure.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
We're limited in time here. I need you to wrap up your commentary, maybe a little bit short. We'd be happy to take any additional thoughts in writing for the committee. But I've got another bill that's on the table, and I've got the bill sponsor out in the hallway. And so if you could summarize your comments, please.
Yes. Just 3 points here, that they have robust protocols in place to help ensure independence, balance, and objectivity. They have a strong track record for bringing an interdisciplinary approach and emphasizing risk assessment. And lastly, and most importantly, their findings possess a high degree of credibility and independence that's simply not available from any single entity or consulting firm. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Spader. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Spader, if I might, Mr. Chairman, you said that everything that is submitted to the Academy is public. How would they deal with things that were proprietary in nature, be it a process or research, and things that may be required by the FEC to be held in confidence because it might affect a stock price or commodities price? How would that be figured in to a decision-making process if there was a public company being traded on the Yukon that had proprietary information that they could not share, or if they did share, would be a problem? How would the Academy have dealt with that?
Yes, through the chair. The National Academy does do some very contentious and they issues at times, and they also deal with some issues that have confidentiality. Under certain circumstances, they can extend confidentiality to some elements. However, what we're talking about in our case and in many of the cases, such as the Outer Continental Shelf and North Slope oil and gas development, we're talking about baseline environmental data, issues like the size of stocks, water quality, those kinds of environmental information. But the baseline policy for the National Research Council is to provide advice about information which can be made publicly available. And as you look through the list of studies, nearly all of these kinds of studies deal with scientific information and often environmental-related information.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We probably need to talk to somebody from the Academy to actually get the answers to those questions.
Okay.
I don't know if we have anyone like that.
And any additional questions, Vice Chair Keller?
Yeah. I think from your testimony, I heard you saying that the value here is that we're buying the objectivity, we're buying the connection to the reputation of the Academy and NRC. And you stop short of saying that the scientist who works for the state or works for industry is not objective, but you implied that to get the real objective perspective, this would be a good way to go, and I appreciate that. I was just wondering, if it wouldn't, when you did the sustainable salmon project, did you identify, how early in the process was that? Did you identify questions that would not have been asked if you had not been involved, and just where you're at? It just seems like it would be a good time to call in the NRC after we get the data that is being collected right now by industry and by the state after the permit gets offered.
Yes, through the chair. We commissioned this study early on in the process in order to provide a broad perspective to ask to help us ask the not just broad questions but integrative questions that in our case though we had a scientific technical committee made up of leading fishery scientists, they welcomed this study because it helped them to do their work. It helped our own science panel to do their work by providing corroboration and outside an objective view. So they took the input from the National Research Council on developing an effective plan, and then the National Research Council came in after they had developed a draft plan and provided a review and commentary on that plan. So we received the benefit of both the NRC at the beginning of the process to set out this synthetic and multidisciplinary set of key questions, and then we asked them to come back after the plan was developed to provide another layer of expert review and objective advice.
Thank you so much.
Okay, well, not seeing any additional questions for Dr. Spader, thank you, Joe, for offering your time today. Thank you to the bill sponsor for presenting the bill, HCR 15. And with that, I'm going to close the hearing on HCR 15 and let the committee know that we'll set that aside for a future hearing. And with that, we would like to invite the sponsor of HJR 32, who is somewhere here. and ask him to come up and testify on his bill. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I'm doing double duty in committees today, so I'm going to sneak over to the other committee to see if they need to vote to pass something out, and I'll return as soon as I can.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Morning, Representative Stoltz.
Welcome, Chairman Edgman. This is a new era. We have a personal use issue before the Fisheries Committee, and I am eternally grateful to your new era of leadership on there. I am Bill Stoltz. I represent House District 16, which represents the northern parts of the municipality of Anchorage and rural southern Mat-Su, and the House of Representatives. Today I'm presenting House Joint Resolution 32, expressing the legislature's position on support of the personal use fisheries on the Kisilof, Kenai, and Copper Rivers, more commonly known as the Chitna Dipnet fishery, fisheries that benefit over 30,000 Alaska families and extrapolated as probably conservative 95 to 100,000 individual Alaskans, along with subsistence, the only all-Alaskan resident fishery. Provides protein for Alaskan families. Many ways, it's a almost a cultural tradition. So when we saw that there was some quiet movement through, can be described as almost a backdoor effort to file by some fisheries groups representing fishery groups on the Cook Inlet in a separate lawsuit by an individual in the Prince William Sound region to seek for the acting Secretary of Commerce at the federal level to overturn these fisheries, to remove them as improperly established fisheries. My first reaction was just utter disbelief, and so we put this resolution forward as the only mechanism that I could see to express our position and to ask state agencies to engage to protect these personal use all Alaskan fisheries, and subsequently I've had communications with the Department of Fish and Game. The commissioner is indicates he's engaged on this. I brought it up during the address by our junior senator Mark Begich, my concern, and he's I suspect he will be engaged in communicating to the Secretary of Commerce, but this measure before us, and Mr. Chairman, I'd really be more comfortable talking about the CS than I would about the original version.
Yes, and with that, Representative Stoltz, if I could just ask the Vice Chair to move the CS so we can actually discuss it. That should be in your bill packets.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that we accept the CS for House Joint Resolution 32, and that's 26LS0865 ECHO for the working document for the committee.
And I'll object just for discussion purposes, Representative Stoltz.
And Mr. Chairman, when this issue came before us, I had very little time to prepare it in the midst of many of the other functions that I'm involved with around this building, and I was also acting with a little bit of anger at this attempt to for a small group of fishermen to go after so many Alaskan residents. I clearly took too broad a brush, and sometimes when you're in the heat of passion on an issue, which I am passionate about this issue, you sometimes say things or express things in the way that's not the most effective and the most accurate, because I know I have many good friends and advocates. I sit on the ASME board. I've probably helped move as many commercial fishery bills as many members from coastal communities, and I apologize for not being here sharp at 9 o'clock to head up, but we had met last night to working on fiscal notes, and we were endeavoring after a heated pitch battle. We made sure the fiscal note for House Bill 20 was included, and I wanted to be up there to be able to ratify that inclusion in our paltry $2.9 million in fiscal notes that essential bill was included, although it's not yet passed. So that's my apology for being late today. But I really want to, this bill is not a Bill Stoltz bill. This is really representing a lot of regions of state, a lot of citizens. Mr. Chairman, I can, on the rare occasions over the special session we have, when I can sneak out to the Kasilof River to do some dip netting, I'm really not even an election. I can do it in an election year because I see so many of my constituents out there, Alaskan families gathering their protein for the coming season in a family, in about one of the most wholesome activities you can imagine, families working together to mothers, fathers, kids. I would like to thank the Interior delegation. They've really taken a lead. Representative Kawasaki is chairman of the delegation on unifying on this position on fisheries in general. The Anchorage delegation, I'd really like to thank Representative Johnson for his efforts on fisheries, and I wish we had the unanimity on fisheries issues in the Anchorage delegation that you do in Fairbanks, just as a side note. Speaker, the whereas is obviously this is an important activity, affects a lot of Alaskans. It is, again, an all-Alaskan fishery, protein in Alaskans' freezers, the best possible food. I don't think there's much debate that wild Alaskan salmon is probably the best thing we can have on our tables for all Alaskans, and this is a great mechanism that allows that to happen through all economic stratas, and for some it's a very essential, for some it's more lifestyle, just like many of our fisheries have become. Not yours, but with that, I appreciate the opportunity to present this, and I would I apologize if I'll stay for any questions, but I'm supposed to be chairing finance upstairs, but I'd be happy to answer any questions, but apologize if I have to leave.
Well, thank you, Representative Stolson. With an eye on brevity, I would ask committee members to present their questions. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, and this will be very brief. Representative Stoltz, I'm looking at some legislation. I'm wondering where to fit this in that would basically say if they prevail in this lawsuit that every Alaskan would become a subsistence user, which would give us the personal use fishery a priority over subsistence or over the Cook Inlet. And I'm wondering if there's any place that would fit into this resolution.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I'm trying to, that's an interesting concept, but this is a fairly direct message, and we've been able to develop a lot of consensus among other users outside of the very small segment in the Cook Inlet region. Without having an opportunity to vet that out, I think we're sending a very direct message, which is unified all but a very small group of people that are really disassociated with some realities about Alaska life outside of their small region.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that, and I haven't had a lot of chance to look at this, Representative Stoltz, but I do want to put that on the table as something that maybe we could look at and prioritize a little differently, I'll talk to you later off the record on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Vice Chair Keller.
I just want to thank the sponsor for bringing this forward. Very important to me. I raised my kids on fish, and I think that keeping the lines drawn so that we keep the resources primarily and first for the citizens of Alaska is great. Thank you.
Representative Munoz.
I agree. Representative Stoltz, I think it's very good to advocate for the personal use fisheries. And also, I really appreciate your moderation in the second version. So I appreciate that, and I do support this resolution.
Representative Book, any comments, questions? If not, any closing comments, Representative Stoltz?
I really thank you for bringing this before the committee. And Mr. Mulligan of my staff is here. He knows, he's forgotten more about fisheries than I know.
Okay. Well, with that, not seeing any burning questions from any committee members, thank you for coming forward, Representative Stoltz. And with that, that ends the committee's agenda for the day.
You sure you're not ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
And I'm handed a note that in terms of adopting the CS, I need to remove my objection, which I will do. And if there's no objection to me doing so, we have the CS in front of us. And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting at 10:05.